Today we go back to the land again and hear stories about living closely with the natural world and what the back to the land ethos looks like today. Take Melissa Coleman. Her memoir, This Life Is in Your Hands, tells the story of her homesteading parents, protégés of back to the land giants Helen and Scott Nearing. Here's a reading from her book.
As the bell chimed, Helen took my small hand and turned it upward in hers. The kitchen was warm, but her skin cool and leathery. Mama returned with Heidi as I stood, long hair braided and 6 years brave, holding my breath. We knew about Helen that when she didn't have something interesting to say, she changed the subject. She smoothed my palm with her thumbs and looked down, but also in, her cropped granite hair holding the dusty smell of old books. "What's this?" she asked of the marks I'd made with Papa's red magic marker. "A map," I told her, proud of the artistry on my fingers. "A map of our farm." "Pshaw!" She tossed my hand aside like an old turnip from the root cellar. So she read Heidi's palm instead. Heidi was a blue-eyed 2-year-old, an incontainable spirit, everyone said. Even she held still, mouth open, breathing heavy, snug in the sling on Mama's back as Helen smoothed out her little fingers. "Short lifeline," Helen muttered, bending toward the light from the window, then paused as if catching herself too late. "What do you mean by short?" Mama asked, brown eyes alert, mother bird-like. 30, 40 years? "Oh, it doesn't mean a thing," Helen said, and began to mumble about the overabundance of tomatoes in the garden. 7 years earlier, Helen had thought differently, perhaps, as she read my father Elliot's hands when he and Mama visited looking for land. Understanding the lines is an attempt to understand why things happen as they do. Also, a quick way to figure out who might make a good neighbor. Helen and Scott Nearing, authors of the homesteading Bible Living the Good Life, wanted young people around who would find the same joys in country living as they did. Their philosophy held the promise of a simple life, far removed from the troubles of the modern world. The good life. "Very strong lines," Helen told Papa that summer of 1968. He had the deepest fate line she'd ever seen, and wide, capable hands. Shortly after that visit, my parents received a postcard from Helen and Scott offering to sell the 60 acres next door. That's how we came to be back to the landers, living on a farm cut from the woods, without electricity, running water, or phone, on that remote peninsula along the coast of Maine, trying something different to see if truth could be found in it.
Sheila Shigley. Reading from Melissa Coleman's memoir, This Life Is in Your Hands. Coleman spent years of her childhood growing up in rural Maine with her sister Heidi and parents Elliot and Sue Coleman, who built their own house and planted their own land back in the 60s and 70s. Along the way, Elliot Coleman became a national figurehead for the organic food movement and remains so today. Coleman told Ann Strangechamps that their life was far from conventional.
We were completely off the grid. My dad and mom, before I was born, they built our cabin. Well, first of all, they had to clear the land. The land was treed, and they had bought this land from the Nearings. It was sort of a neighboring acreage, and they had to clear the trees, dig a well, and then they started to build this house, which was they built for $680.
Wow.
And yeah, with, you know, just hand tools. At first, my dad didn't even get a backhoe in or anything like that to help. He dug the foundation himself.
By hand?
Yeah, by hand, yeah, yeah.
So when you said they dug a well, did they do that by hand too?
Yes, yes.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Wow. Now, how did your parents come to this? Did they grow up with farm skills?
Not exactly, actually. My dad's father was a stockbroker in Manhattan, and my mother's father was manager of a bank. And so they grew up, you know, regular middle-class lives. And they, you know, gone to school. And, you know, my dad wanted to be a teacher. And my mother was in school at a college at that time when they met. And so they just sort of had this idea that they wanted to grow their own food. They were big food nuts. They wanted to eat healthy food. And they felt the best way to do that was to grow it themselves. And back then in the 60s and 70s, processed food was a miracle. It was sort of this new thing that was this great time saver. And so everyone was all excited about it, but they hadn't really thought about the fact that it didn't taste that good often and it wasn't always that good for you.
How much do you yourself remember about those years? You were little then.
People always ask this because, of course, I didn't remember everything in my memoir. I had to reconstruct it. But I did start with just some very amazingly powerful, strong memories from my childhood. I sort of collected them like this little treasure chest of things that I remembered. Things from the smells and the sounds and the apprentices, things that they would sing to me or tell to me. And these were very strong memories from young age. And I think that had something to do with the fact that I was living off the grid in such a simple life. And there wasn't all those many distractions that happen in modern life of, you know, the TV and the this and the that. So these things were very, very clear for me. It was a quiet time in a lot of ways. I just recently started thinking about the poem Intimations of Immortality by William Wordsworth and how he talks about how in childhood, nature and everything seems so beautiful and so crisp and clear, and that as we get older, it starts to fade a little bit. And that's exactly what it was like for me. It just, everything was so clear and crisp and beautiful. And then, you know, we all lose that. But for me, I lost it in a sort of tragic way. And so I think that just put a big exclamation point on the whole idea of paradise lost that we all kind of go through as we get older.
Yeah. The tragic way is your younger sister died accidentally. Do you remember that day?
Yes, I do. And that is one day that I remember very clearly. I don't remember everything, and that was part of why I felt that I needed to write the book and sort of make peace with what happened. But I do remember just very, very clearly, you know, wanting to go down and find out what happened to my sister and the sort of chaos that ensued, and just being so completely shocked by such a thing happening. It was such a shock at that age in a world that seemed so safe and beautiful.
How old was she?
She was 3 and I was 7.
And what happened?
Well, my sister and I loved to play down by we had a little irrigation pond below the gardens, and it usually wasn't that deep. It was a shallow pond, and or around the edges, it was very shallow. And so we would play there and we would catch frogs, and we loved to do that. It was not thought of as a dangerous thing for us to do. But that day, you know, the night before, it had rained a lot. There'd been a lot of rain. So the pond had gotten much deeper and the banks were slippery. My mother was trying to clean the house, and I was playing in the loft where I like to play. And my sister kept coming to us and saying that she wanted to play with me or for my mom to play with her. And we just, you know, as you do, we said, oh, I'm busy, or, you know, in a minute. And so she went off by herself down to the pond. And my mother was the one who found her down there at the pond, but it was too late at that point.
Wow. There was a terrible scene that night, too. To make everything worse, the local police showed up and they wanted to take your sister's body away to the local undertaker, but your parents refused. There was this sort of standoff.
Right. Well, my father, I think any parent, you know, the first reaction to something like this happening is a lot of anger. Just the thought that they were going to take her body away was more than my father could stand. It was sort of this procedure that the ambulance went through, and they were going to take her in. And, you know, in those days, the bodies get prepared, and as my father saw it, as getting put full of chemicals. And that was the last thing he wanted to happen to his child that he tried to raise so naturally. So he told them no. He said, no, I am not letting you take my child. I want her buried here at our farm. Luckily, there was, a DA who was Jewish, and in the Jewish tradition, they, I hope I'm remembering this correctly, they want the body to be buried within 24 hours. And so he granted the permission to my dad to do that. So we were able to bury her on the land, and she's there today. I like to go visit her grave on the farm where I grew up.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Your childhood memories must be split into before and after.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it happens for all of us. You know, you start to lose that innocence of childhood as you get older. But that just kind of was like this big bam. And then after that, you know, my parents' marriage began to dissolve. And we left the farm when I was 9, so 2 years later. And then I moved to suburbia. You know, I moved to suburban Boston. And it was a big shock to sort of go from the life I was living to that. It just sort of felt like I'd lost so much wonderful beauty and connection to nature.
Well, it wasn't just your innocence, your sense of innocence that was lost either, I imagine, for both of your parents. There must have been a sense that, you know, here they'd gone back to the land to try to create and build the new paradise, and, you know, it had ended so terribly.
Exactly. I mean, I think you just never think that something would go wrong like that when you're trying to do something that you feel is so right and so wholesome. And what I think, you know, when I think about it, it was too much back then to try to do all that. It was very extreme, and it was the times to be so extreme like that. And today, it isn't quite as much of an extreme statement. Like, we had to go all the way to one side with the pendulum to kind of make this break. And today, I think people are able to live more simply. You know, they can grow their own food and have internet and have things that help them to just make their lives a little more easier so that they don't get pushed quite to that extreme. I mean, we were living like the pioneers were, and lots of things, crazy things happen like that to the pioneers. But today I don't see it as a cautionary tale, because I see it as a symptom of a time and a place. And today I see people doing, living like this and having their gardens and being able to balance it all in a way that is very sustainable and very, you know, it's you have that same beauty and that same connection to nature, and yet you're also sort of still part of the world in a way that makes life a little bit easier.
Well, how do you look back on the whole back to the land experiment now?
I look back on it as, you know, I just, despite all the things that happened and the craziness that we were just talking about, I just see it as such an amazing, unique time in history that, you know, it's never going to be quite like that again. And, you know, people, like I was saying earlier, people today, it's just much more sustainable. And I see it as this time that had to happen, though. It had to, we had to do that. We had to go back to go forward. And, you know, the chemical agriculture industry had become sort of all pervasive, and it didn't have any challengers. So there needed to be this break that happened and this sort of crazy people that did it. And, you know, people thought we were really weird and really strange and really, it was challenging to the system. But those things need to happen. People, you know, if you're one of those people, I say go for it. And just, you know, you got to follow your heart. You got to do that crazy thing, because if we all just sit around being normal, the world is just going to become very boring. I feel like, you know, despite everything crazy that happened, what we did was the right thing to do. And I wouldn't change it for anything. And today, you know, I see the fruits of that, that you can go to the farmer's market and find organic food. There's health food stores. There's just variety in the food out there. And, you know, back then there was maybe one health food store in the state of Maine and one farmer's market. I really think it needed to happen, and I'm glad we were part of it.
Melissa Coleman lives in Freeport, Maine with her husband and twin daughters. She's the author of This Life Is In Your Hands, and Strange Champ spoke with her.